Probably really nice, simple, you know, not super amount of gain, but you know, you're going to get 3 dB of gain out of the log periodic, so what's the big deal? That sounds great. Good idea. Anybody else have suggestions? Okay, Stu, back to you. There's your answer.
Okay, KD2CBR, thank you very much. I'll take your suggestion from Dan and back to the net, KD2CBR.
Yeah, it's kind of nice. So, Stu, you have the Arrow antenna, and there's a couple of different ones, if I remember right. You have cheap Yagis, which you can build yourself. And the third one is this log periodic, which is made by Elk antenna. So, very good stuff. Very good stuff. All right. Anyway, so that should be fine. All righty. Let's see. Just trying to think. See who's next. Well, anyway, anybody else, or Bob, did you have anything else you wanted, I mean, Stu, did you have anything else you wanted to add to that?
No, that should give me enough info to work on. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And do we have WA2MTZ on frequency too? I guess Bob's not in. Okay, very good. I just want to give Gers a chance to get in to make sure he does. I don't know if he has a question or comment, but I would make sure he gets to register that. KD2CKIW2TTT.
I go in Pinkfield Junior, but well left. I was with
Gers, we got almost none of that because your signal is strong, but your audio is very remote. It's like you're very soft-spoken, and the microphone must be 6 inches or a foot away from your face. So you really got to close talk that mic and speak up a little bit. But I got the impression it was nothing that you wanted to do. You're just checking in. Okay, very good. All right, let's see. I forgot to write it down. There was another station with a comment or a question. Let's first try Don first. WDJK, are you back? K2BAR?
Yeah, I think somebody jumped over me. I think Noel was playing with the Echo Link at the time. I had mentioned that there was a test session in November. November on the third Friday, which is the 16th of November at 7 p.m. at the high school, and we'll be in classroom number 123. And if the well was had come in on the Echo Link at the time, probably took me out. Back to net, W2JK.
Well, that's possible. That's certainly possible. Anyway, that's good. Anybody have any questions about the upcoming test session in November? Okay, very good, Don. Thank you for your contribution to that. And by the way, we have Barra Portable Day this Saturday from 10 to 1 in Pascack Brook Park. And I believe that's in Emerson, Pascack Brook Park in Emerson. It's on a side street just one block west of the traffic light on Old Hook Road by the supermarket there. Just one block west, head north. It'll be on the west side of the street. That's Pascack Brook Park, 10 to 1. Bring your portable ham station stuff. Mostly it'll be HF, but even if you don't have a station to bring, you come and enjoy the opportunity to operate maybe somebody else's and see how their portable station operates. That'd be kind of fun. Alrighty. Let's see now. Let's see. Another station, a KD2, no, KB2, I'm sorry, I missed your call, forgive me. We got a question. This is Q2BAR, W2TTT. Is there a KB2 who was new and had a question?
KB2, Zulu Golf Sierra from the Bronx, his name is David, I think he had a question, over, my, over.
Yeah, that's the one. David, are you there?
Yes, I am, KB3ZGS. I have a question, new to this, about a week and a half old. And I was just wondering how to get into the internet ends of the repeaters, or if it's something I have to do on my end, or is it automatically on the repeaters that we're going off of?
Oh, David, that's a marvelous question. How do you get involved on some of the internet side of this game? Well, there are a couple of different internet things, but the easiest one to get involved on is probably Echolink. Because it requires no communications equipment other than a computer or an Android phone or an iPhone or something like that. And the way it works is go to Echolink, just Google Echolink, and you'll go to the website. There'll be a how to register. Go ahead and register. There's a couple of different ways to register. You just want to verify that you have a valid amateur radio call sign. When you do that, then you'll have access. And the way you get access to this particular node is from the internet side is K2 Foxtrot Juliet -L for link. There are three identities which exist: the plain call sign, -L for a link, and -R for repeater. And whether they really are links or really are repeaters doesn't really matter. But if you need multiple identities for your Echolink, you can certainly do that. So that's something to think about. Anybody else have anything you want to add about Echolink or other internet access facilities that might be interesting to Steve? All right, so did that help you, KB3ZGS? Pardon me, but my butchering your call sign, W2TTT.
No, not a problem. No, I think maybe you misread my question. When I was at home in Pennsylvania, it seemed that I got on a link or something that was scattered, you know, that was going from repeater to repeater, and I guess through a network of repeaters. That was more the question, I guess. Maybe I misworded that.
Well, there are a couple of link systems. Some are All Stars, some are Asterisk Base, some are D-Star, some are Echolink, and some are IRLP, but and others just are, you know, don't use any digital technology. They just, it's all analog linking. Really depends. So I really don't have anything up the top of my sleeve. There's a Northeast Connect that's pretty cool. It's been around for a while. It's probably the one you're thinking of, over.
Okay, well, I thank you very much. You know, it's a learning process, step by step, and I'm getting it. I'm getting it after a little bit. But again, I thank you so much. I really appreciate it. This is KB3ZGS. The name is Dave. I'm calling from the Bronx right now. Thank you.
K2EIR with an extra comment here.
Go right ahead.
Okay. Things at once, so forgive me if I'm repeating anything that was said, but I don't think we've covered IRLP very well, and I'd just like to mention that on a number of systems, the typical thing is that you can, by issuing the node number with a touch tone pad on the repeater, and usually terminated with something like a pound sign, sometimes not at all, Some other repeaters have special codes, some have access codes, so it's only for members. But the point is, with the essential node number, which is usually four digits, the repeater will hear that and connect you to that node if possible. So, for example, if there's a node in California, and if this system has IRLP, and you enter its four digits, or let me give a good IRLP number that I remember, if you enter 6,000, you will be connected to Sydney, Australia, and you will hear a little message come back to you that you are now connected to whatever the ID is there, you know, call letters of the repeater or whatever, or the name of the system. In Australia, that'll come back as sort of like a recording, and then whatever happens on the repeater you're on and the repeater in Australia, one will be a reflection of the other, which is very nice. And usually this is terminated with 7-3. So you can have a nice QSO session with some other part of the world. It's very nice. And for that, you do need a rig, but it goes over the internet, and one repeater locally is connected with a very remote repeater, usually very remote. So I thought I'd give that in for our station in the Bronx. And there are systems locally that do that. There's one here in Rockland, but it does require membership for the codes, usually. You could talk to the president of the Rockland Repeater Association. Okay, back to net control. This is W2TTT from K2EIR.
Yeah, thank you. The basic philosophical difference between IRLP and Echolink is that IRLP requires that your node is registered and that the node be have a radio access for the users. It doesn't have to be a repeater, it could be simplex. In fact, we have such a thing on 223600. 223600, we have W2MSK right here in Bergenfield. Operates on a simplex frequency. On the other hand, you have Echolink, which allows landline stations, if you will, such as computers and things, to connect to other stations, either other computers or to nodes that are attached to repeaters and remote bases and access points, just like this is. Because, for instance, this is the K2ETN repeater, but the K2FJ-L Echolink, and it's actually remote. It's at in Montvale, up at the Blue Station. So it accesses the repeater somewhat similar in a way to what you and I do. It puts the signal through the repeater and then listens to the response and puts it out on the internet, gets its information from the internet. Alrighty, anything else on this topic?
I just want to say thank you very, very much for your help and wisdom. And I'll be trying that out. KB3DGS.
Okay, Dave, no problem. And, feel free to keep us in mind. If you have a question or a follow-up on this, anybody can email me at whiskey2tangotangotango@arrl.net or att.net. That's whiskey2tangotangotango@arrl.net or att.net. Alrighty. I think our next comment, besides Noel's question and my question, do we have any other questions or comments for the net that I have ignored?
A2EIR.
Yes, I'm sorry, Howie. Go right ahead.
Okay, it's swap and shop type items. I also want to point out that if individuals are not interested in any of these items, that some of these items may be good grab bag pieces that Barra might be interested in. And if someone, especially if someone from Barra wants to come and pick them up, they're welcome to it for the grand price of zero. Okay, here's some of the things I have, which are definitely free. I have a Series 2 laser jet printer with an optional cartridge, font cartridge, I think it's the B cartridge, with manuals, okay? The last I remember this thing has, was working. It's been sitting around in my garage or in the apartment probably for 10 years unused. The toner cartridge was empty, so I couldn't really print with it. I think there may be enough toner in it to demonstrate that it works. So it's a very old printer, but it works, and I think I originally paid about $1,500 for it. yours for the grand price of zero. Okay, let this reset, and I'll go on to item two. Item two, I have another laser printer, an HP LaserJet Series 1200. I may have difficulty finding the software for this. The printer works, but not quite right. We're getting smeary print, and that's what my wife told me, and I didn't have time to look into it. We've tried it with two toner cartridges that were bought, I think, at the same time at the same store, so we don't know whether it's the toner cartridges or something in the printer, but even if it's something in the printer, like a fixing element, you know, a heater or something like that, probably is repairable, and the question is at what cost. But the printer is yours for zero, a second laser printer, okay? So I've listed two. Stand by for item three. Item three is yet another printer. I have a NEC, that is a NEC T7, I think it was, pin writer. This was a letter quality, maybe 24-pin printer, wide carriage, and the last I know, it was working perfectly. I also have for that, I used to re-ink my ribbons. So I have a what's called a Mac re-inker, and you could, and I still have ink, and you can re-ink the ribbons, and this thing will work, as far as I know. I say as far as I know because I have the portable antenna, the antenna I'm using right now, on my file cabinet, within inches of this printer, and I have not tested the printer since I started doing this practice, so it is possible RF has damaged it, but hopefully the printer still works as good as ever, and most computers with Windows will automatically configure themselves for this, so that you can get, you know, big fonts and whatever. It's rather flexible, surprisingly, and somewhere I have the manuals, and I can't promise I can provide the manuals the same day I provide the printers, but eventually, yes. Okay, let me stand by one more time. Okay, I have a computer monitor. I have a NEC multi-sync monitor, fairly big. It must be in the 20-something inch range, at least 17. No, I shouldn't say at least 17. It's probably either 15 or 17, or more likely 17. And this does not perfectly work. It will work at 640 by 480, and it may not sync up at higher resolutions. And again, the price for this, just like the Pinwriter and the LaserJet 1200 and the Series 2 LaserJet, is zero. You just have to come and pick it up. Let's see what else. I have two bicycles. I have 10-speed bicycles, Marushi brand. I'd like to get some money for this, if someone will make me an offer. I have three air conditioners. One is only 6 months old, about 5,000 BTU. For that, I'd like to get some sort of offer, but the other two are free. So we've got three air conditioners, two of which are free. Again, I'd hope you'd come and pick it up. Barra grab bag possibility. Stand by. Barra grab bag, or anybody who wants to do what I was hoping to do, I have a VCR here that doesn't quite work perfectly. It probably suffers on quality, and maybe the tape gets jammed, but, you know, the electronics in it are fine, and I was saving it to use for possibly its chassis, its power supply, whatever, if you want to build some project, maybe your own receiver. I figured, gee, at least the cabinet and chassis are good for that, and maybe even the power supply or whatever. And it may still be good as a big CR, you know, good enough for some duplication work. So we've got that. I've got a cassette tape, the standard cassette tape player. I think it's Sony. And there, too, it isn't really working. Tape's jammed. But the power and the electronics in it are probably perfectly okay. So either salvage it or reuse the chassis for your next ham radio project, because even if you go out and want to buy a little aluminum box, you're probably going to spend $10. And the price of this is zero. Just pick it up. So those are my suggestions for grab bags. I think I have some other things, but I don't remember them right now, and I'll try to send you an email list, Gordon. W2TTT from K2EIR.
Both not an interesting laundry list. Okay, thank you, Howie. Anybody interested in some of this stuff? Hi, I'm very much interested in the printers, so we can talk about that offline if no one jumps on it during the net. So feel free to keep me in mind for those if no one else jumps for them, okay? I'm sorry, say again.
I said it's the best offer I've had today. Yes, I will keep you in mind. K2EIR.
Okay, very good. Was there something on the Echolink someone wanted to jump in? Okay, very good. All righty. Anybody else have any, I'll call swap and shop items that they want to get rid of in a manner similar to what Howie was offering? Please call K2BARW2TTT. Alrighty, guess not. Alrighty, well, thank you, Howie. Now, are there any, let's see, before we move to Noel's question, are there any other, there's Noel's question to be followed by my question. So, are there any other stations with stuff?
K2EIR with one more addition.
That's...
Okay, I have in the storeroom, I know, two tires for my 98 Camry mounted on rims. So if someone has a 98 Camry and wants that for the rims, I think it would be a good deal. The tires may still be okay. I don't remember if they're regular snow tires, but they probably were snow tires. So once again, 98 Camry, like the LE model, I know it fits that. K2EIR.
Outstanding. Okay, very good. Two Camry tires for a 98 mounted, ready to rock and roll. Anybody interested? Just let Howie know. Okay. Are there any other stations or things before we move to Noel and my questions? Well, Mr. Noel, it's all yours. You have a wonderful or some other superlative type question. K2BARW2TTT.
Okay, this is Antonio. I was actually looking at a discussion online. It was actually quite, I don't know what the word would be, virulent. Anyway, there was some excitement there. And I couldn't figure out what they were really getting upset about. Anyway, what they were talking about was an app for an iPhone or an iPad. And it was called the Maidenhead Locator. Now, having been married for 30 years, I figured I knew about that. However, what their argument was seemed to be was one wanted minutes and seconds, and the other was that no, decimal, minutes and decimal was better. So could you clarify that?
Okay, yes. A lot of people use different ways to express location.
and it's degrees, minutes, and seconds. That's what we were all taught in school. But there are actually several other ways of approaching it. There's degrees, minutes, and decimal minutes. Then there's degrees and decimal degrees. Well, all of those will get you to the same place. It's going to make sure that you know what you're talking about when you give out the numbers. And yes, degrees and decimal degrees seemingly the most popular among folks who are using, you know, handheld devices these days, because there's only one punctuation mark. You don't have to do anything real fancy. It's, you know, XX dot or XXX dot blah, 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 as many digits of precision that you need. And that's what that's about. And I, by the way, prefer degrees and decimal degrees as well. Anybody else have any thoughts?
Yeah, I heard Tom Maiden, they'd use, isn't that something that we use for the grid square location? Where did that setup?
Yes, it's a place in the UK, and it was where the scheme for the amateur radio grid square system was conceived, and it was named after that location. Anybody else with comments on this one? Well, Mr. Noel, there is your answer in two dimensions. One was the how to express a latitude and longitude, and the other is how to, from whence the name comes.
Why they would be upset with each other, or something silly like that.
Because there are people who are so firmly ensconced with degrees, minutes, seconds, or degrees, minutes, and decimal minutes, that the whole concept of simplifying the whole thing to degrees and decimal degrees is unconscionable. Similarly, those who have adopted degrees and decimal degrees don't understand why the rest of the world hasn't caught up with them. And with all due respect to the others, I kind of agree with the snottiness of the people who have adopted it. It makes a lot of sense.
JK with a question.
Go ahead, Don.
How do they express the decimal?
You can create, you can decide how you want it displayed and how you want to enter it. You can choose.
Okay, so that's your reason for the argument, because if it's GPS says do it this way, then you'd have to do it that way, but you have the option. Okay, thank you. 52JK.
Well, yeah, let me also give you something else to be chewing on. For longitude, some use negative numbers for west and positive numbers for east, as opposed to using a letter designator. They express it purely as a numeric. So minus 74 degrees will put you on a line that goes through Rivervale, New Jersey, whereas plus 74 degrees will put you somewhere in Eastern Europe, or actually probably in West Asia. Yeah, that's a good question. So anybody else with questions about lat-long, expressing it in a GPS, et cetera, you know, maybe we should have a fox hunt day. Maybe we should have a GPS,
what do you call it, like a geocaching day. And when you find the geocache, then you'll be told what frequency to go to. We can do temporary geocaches. We get on the repeater and immediately give out three coordinates, for instance. And the three coordinates, you have to go to get the frequency or the bearing, if you will, for where the fox is, and maybe portions of the frequency, something like that. You go to all three with your GPS, and then you put the message together, and then you triangulate, and away you go. That might be fun. All righty. Anybody else?
Yeah, S2K.
S2K, go ahead.
Well, I suppose it's a little bit like all religious arguments. It depends on what you've grown up with and are comfortable with, but and it really doesn't make a whole heck of a lot of difference as long as everybody knows that that's what you're talking about. Otherwise, you're liable to go slamming into Mars at, you know, 27 million kilometers per fortnight.
There you go. Outstanding. What a great measure that is. And with a mass measured in stone, right?
Use any measure you want, just as long as you're specific.
Well, yeah. Anyway. Wouldn't that be lovely? Alrighty. So, that's actually a good point. As far as that goes, I think there's also two different datums that are used. There's, was it 83 and 27 datum, and you got to make sure everybody's using the same map reference datum when you have the opportunity to look, because otherwise your life will stink really badly. You'll find yourself not quite where you thought you were. You'll be nearby, but not as near as you need. The other thing is knowing the declination. If you're looking translated to a map, it's also good to know the declination. What if we should do a mapping course one day for the members of the club? That would be good. Especially if we're going to do support, search and support SAR activities. That would be helpful. Alrighty. Anybody else with questions on this topic? Okie doke. Noel, back to you for any follow-ups you have.
Oh, no. I was just looking at the fox hunting app, which also had some interesting reviews both ways. One person loved it, one person hated it. They have a fox hunt coming up really soon, is what my understanding is. I'm trying to get ready for that.
It is a week from Sunday. Hope next year that we can flip-flop or push out that a week so that we can do Jamboree on the Air and that weekend and maybe the fox hunt the week after that. I know we can't go earlier with Portable Day because on a Sunday anyway, because typically the crop walk shows up about then. Alrighty. Anything else, Mr. Noel?
No, thank you. Except it is my intention to bring my motorhome over to Kitsight on Tuesday night if all goes well. And we're going to see about if Joyce wants to figure out how to put a tent on it. First, we'll have to find a 10-foot ladder someplace because it's 12-foot 4 inches high.
Well, I have an 8-foot A-frame ladder, and I have a 12-foot straight-up aluminum ladder you can lean up against something. If you're interested, it's not an extension ladder, it's just a single section, but you're welcome to use it if you'd like. I can't bring it to that on Tuesday night because I have a scout meeting, but you're welcome to bring it over to the scout meeting after you you know, enchant everybody at Kid Night if you want. That'd be fun too on Tuesday if you so desire, but I'll leave that to your own discretion, over.
Sounds good. And to all y'all.
All right, Noel, anything more? I'm sorry, I got distracted here for a moment.
No, that's about it. Trying to decide whether we should put a loop up there and call it good enough. It'll be somewhere around 70, 80 foot around. And just throw a tuner real close to it. Or whether we should try a offset dipole, something that the joist would dream up. Say a 40 meter offset dipole, which might fit. Might have to do a little linear loading at one end. Or perhaps a fan dipole, bending it around. So it's going to be interesting to try out. That's it. This is Antonio.
Okay. Very good. Well, thinking about that, I would think you'd want a large gauge piece of wire strapped around above the roof line, supported by something that's aerodynamically stable and rigid. And it doesn't have to go all the way around the vehicle, but it's certainly a good chunk. You could start at one end and go down toward the end, and then right, like down one side partway to the end, the back end, let's say, across the back, and then up the other length, and then maybe a little bit across the front, and call it square there. But, you know, you want to make it a logical length of some sort if you're end feeding it. And that would work fine, too. Alrighty. So, let's see. The next thing is also to use a screwdriver. And I'll be real honest, I've been very partial to having a 20 meter and a 40 meter hamstick when I'm traveling on a vehicle all the time, and just be able to switch to them. There's something to be said for something simple as that, and go from there. So I would recommend that as well, because under different propagation modes, you might find these different antennas work for you differently. Even when I have an adjustable screwdriver, I always throw a 40 meter hamstick on when I'm on long distance travel, just on principle. Even if I don't have a 20, I always have a 40. And that's just my way of just having something reliable that will work even if everything else breaks or doesn't work right or has some other problem of one form or another. Any comments on that? That answers that question. So, Noel, anything else from you before I ask my question?
No, not at all. That's why I've been trying to turn it back to net.
Okay, just trying to be thorough and trying to be thoughtful here. Alrighty, so my question is whether or not, we've been looking at those DVB-T digital video broadcast TV, digital broadcast, digital video broadcast terrestrial, that's what DVB-T stands for, and these USB receivers that have been selling for $20, I have one, and we don't use that kind of digital TV here, but several different people have come up with software to turn them into broadband scanners, software-defined radio-type scanners and receivers. And I've noted that the software is available for Windows and for various Linux implementations. So I was wondering, and the question is probably focused on NS2K, but if any of those implementations happen to be on a Raspberry Pi controller, and just how much overclocking would you need in order to get enough performance out of it to be able to run it? Because I've tried running it on a old Windows machine, a Windows XP machine, that's severely burdened with lots of stuff, and only a little more than, you know, like a 1.2 gig processor, so it's nothing fantastic. And I'm wondering if one of these little, you know, processors that are in the Raspberry Pi have enough onions in them to be able to effectively deliver, you know, performance, receiver performance using the DVB-T module. What do you think, Jim? NS2K, K2BARWCTT.
And NS2K. Actually, I don't know a whole heck of a lot about it. It's anyway. But I have a sneaky feeling that DVB-T uses MPEG-2. And you can get an MPEG-2 decode license. It doesn't normally come with it, but for like, you know, $1.85 or something, you can get an MPEG-2 license, something like that, from the Pi Foundation. How should I say, processing power beyond that it requires, I don't know. The Pi is optimized to do that kind of decoding, so it may be possible that could work. And, of course, there are implementations of DVB-T, blah, 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 engines that run under Linux. So, okay, that's another positive. Beyond that, I don't know a whole heck of a lot.
Okay, so the magic mystery is going to be whether or not an implementation of Linux that will fit on a Raspberry Pi will allow you to, or will have enough horsepower on that processor to allow it, you know, reasonable performance across the USB 2 port. I think that's the real question. Since we're not using DVB-T, I don't think we need the MPEG-2 license, although that's an intriguing option to consider with Raspberry Pi in general, getting an MPEG-2 license. It might be useful, although, you know, there might be some DVB-T programming streams available on the internet. So conceivably, that they could be done that way, and you wouldn't even need the RF deck of the DVB-T receiver. But that's a different question. I'm more looking at the idea of using one of the various packages under Linux on a decoder packages to turn it into a general coverage receiver using a Raspberry Pi as the processing engine. I think that would be very, very cool. And I have both some personal and some professional ideas for why that might be fun. Anyway, so we will see. So, anybody else have any thoughts on the subject?
My question is, which DVB-T dongle do you have?
There were two kinds available, and they were basically the same price. The ones with the 400 series chip, the 400U chip, and the other one with the 4000U chip. You want the one with the 4000U chip.
Okay, that'll require a certain more. Anyway, other comment is the replacement came in today. I got everything except for the case, but other stuff did come in.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Good. Good, good, good. Well, let me know which way you want to do it. Do you want this one back, or do you want it just, you know, any differential monies, which I suspect there are. It's no big deal. Let me know at your pleasure. But yeah, it's
something else to do. The other question is, while you're on that, did it come with a newer image of the newer build for the software, for the Linux software? If so, can we clone it?
No, no, that's all downloadable. The only thing that might be newer is the some of the core software, and I believe that's pretty much all updatable, but I don't think they've made any updates at this point.
Okay. I'm good then. Excellent. Errol, keep me posted what you want to do. Yeah, that's super. That's a neat little box. And by the way, on another related note, the two Flex 1500s are heading my way. So the transceiver probe that I've been trying to build, I'll be building up two of them. One for a colleague and one for me to do some initial development work on. And that's going to be a hoot. And from there, we'll be packaging them so that they will be doing their primary work, and then we'll also have a few other applications, which will be kind of interesting as well. Alrighty. Let's see. We've kind of beaten the horse on the other one. So tell me about MPEG-2 licenses and why, well, why don't you explain that in general? Why someone might want to get an MPEG-2 license for any platform, and the Pi Foundation, the Raspberry Pi folks, have the ability to give you an MPEG-2 license for the Raspberry Pi. Do they have an MPEG licensing capability for, let's say, Windows 7 or something like that, or does anybody else do that? And is it as attractively priced? Over.
It comes with, I believe it comes with an MPEG-4 license as part of the base build. MPEG-2 is, in the, $2 neighborhood. And there is another license that's used for Blu-ray and such that are based on some Microsoft-owned technology, and that's also quite inexpensive in the under $5 range. So at that point, you can do quite a lot of the, quite a good assortment of the available compressed video methods. In any case, it's got a fast enough engine in it so that you could take an MPEG-4, say an H.264 video stream and decode that at, say, 1080p 60, I believe. I think it'll go that fast. But for a very low power, inexpensive device, it's pretty amazing that way. And that's 2K.
What we need to do is think of a way to perhaps use a couple of these things for store and forward engines and stream it over Wi-Fi or something to another device. That might be kind of cool to do and allow you to use maybe even Wi-Fi on your phone as a way to remotely display what's coming out of your H.264 server in your palm.
Of course, and for a couple dollars more, you can do the same thing on your best eye thing. Well, several dollars more. But yeah, it's certainly an inexpensive way of doing a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, now, are MPEG-2 and Blu-ray and other such licenses, even an MPEG-4 license, available for what would go a handful of dollars if you had a Windows platform or something else?
No, well, this is strictly to run the decoder on the Raspberry Pi platform itself.
I see. So are there ways to license access for other platforms, I guess is my point, at reasonable rates, what I'll call humanly accessible rates?
that I don't know, as you as an individual may be hard-pressed to do such a thing. There may be a software package that you can buy. There is a fair amount of open source stuff that will do a lot of that. So it's, anyway, if there's something in particular you want to decode, you have to plan that out carefully. NS2K.
Yeah, what I've argued for is let the consumer get a DRM license and, you know, build their own or have their own decoders and be done with it. And wouldn't that be lovely? But instead we put it all in firmware and we provide set-top boxes and other such things that are, shall we say, unnecessarily onerous. I don't have any problem with protecting people's rights or paying for them. I just think that, you know, being able to implement those rights once duly paid for should be more flexibly accomplished than having, you know, to buy a set-top box, if you will, or a DVR with a set-top box built into it.
Yeah, it's pretty annoying when, how should I say, different companies try to monetize absolutely everything. So you essentially have to license breathing in from one company and breathing out from a different company, and God forbid if you don't have both, you're in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay. Alrighty. Anything else you want to add, Jim, or anybody else want to jump in? Again, please. Your audio is low. Is that UNH?
KC2UNH. Just thinking, could you run the Raspberry Pi as a coprocessor on the Windows box?
Oh, yeah. Once you output the H.264 stream that's decoded, yeah, it could output H.264 and spit it out to the other platform and then put it in the standard reader, absolutely. So essentially, you've turned your Raspberry Pi into a licensed decoder / distributor set-top box. That's essentially what I was proposing before, to have it take that stream and then output it over, let's say, streaming Wi-Fi or something, RTP packets or whatever, and send it out to a device such as your Android phone or your iPhone or something else. Alrighty. Well, that was a good question. Anybody have anything else?
Comment on a different subject.
New subjects are always wonderful. Go ahead.
Oh, just to say, your son had asked for a guide. I should have that ready, maybe even as early as tonight, anyway, for the general study guide, my shortened version of the question pool.
Oh, he would like that a lot. Do you have his email address, or do you just want to forward it to me, or both?
Yeah, I'll forward it to you, but he sent me his email.
Yeah, send it to him directly and just copy me. I wouldn't mind having that. That would be very, very instructive and helpful. I'm actually going to provide a prize to the first scout in my troop who gets a general. I've decided that I will, at no incremental cost to me, provide them with a prize, and the prize is going to be a radio that Harvey donated to the troop.
Very nice. NS2K.
It's not an HF radio, but we still have a handy talkie that's really, really good, a modern handy talkie. All right, thank you. Very good. And if anyone else wants copies of that, Jim's not adverse to that, I will forward it on to you as well, for anybody who might be studying for the general, wants a compact Q&A guide. I think the nature of the guide, if I remember right, it only shows the right answer, and that way the file becomes much more compact. Is that right, Tim?
Yes. It's way, way fewer pages, and in at least my feeble mind, it's way easier to not see the wrong answers every time you look at it. I would much rather see only correct answers once I'm familiar with the basic material, but for drill purposes.
Right. And are you leaving the answer letter in place too, so it's totally within context?
Yeah, everything is intact. The only thing I've withdrawn is the wrong answers.
What a great idea. Excellent. Thank you for preparing that. By the way, at the Tricky Tray this weekend that our Boy Scout troop is running, our church is running for our Boy Scout troop, I put in a basket, which is a UV-5R and a technician study guide from the league, a technician study guide from Gordon West, and a set of flashcards that I had available, at one spare set, and so from N3UXK, we had given away several sets to people before, so we're just going to put that in there, and it's going to be a nice basket. It'll be a very nice basket, actually. So if you know somebody who wants to study for their technician and likes Tricky, come by Colin Little Hall at St. John's anytime after 5 on Saturday. I think the drawing starts at 7:30 the drawing starts. But doors open at 5, and so it'll be fun. It helps support our scouts, and also do some other fun things. And also there'll be some eats there too. Alrighty. Anybody else with questions, comments, confusions?
AC2, you on Hitch?
You on Hitch?
NJ Sky Radio. You want to kick that up again? I've got our guidance season up here just kicked in. And I want to try and do something for our pack. See if we can get a nice communication presentation from them.
Okay, so do you want help having a presentation for your pack? Is that what you want?
Yeah, a bit of both. I would like to see NJ Sky Radio actually take off. Also, if there's anything going on around here for Jamboree on the Air, so I can sort of take packs on to if they're available. Anything, if I get volunteers to help, even if it's just on a repeater or something I press for them myself.
Well, I can give you some printed materials, which are more Boy Scout oriented, but they're helpful in the Cub Scout area, and I can walk you through those. You can help that along. And then, certainly on the air, I'd be happy to bring my portable station along. We could do a demo one night for your Cub Scouts. And there are three Jamboree on the air stations planned right now. Troop 80 in Park Ridge is doing one, but I got the impression that they were pretty much thinking about doing it just for themselves at some point on Saturday, but I don't know when. KD2BKD, Bob can tell you about that. Steve Leonardi had a conflict come up, so he's not able to participate, which is regrettable anywhere. Phil Barber and company, the BH2LXC and company, are going to be up at Camp Alpine at some point on Saturday next week, the week from tomorrow. And Phil is the one who distributes the barrel bulletin, just for reference. So that's another person to tap into. And then last but not least,